Hello everybody and welcome to Wikipedia Wanderers for episode 3 in season 5. And because it's that time of the year, Josh, we're talking transfers. I've got questions for you around transfers. You love transfers. Everyone loves a transfer. But I think we've touched on this previously in the podcast. You do take it to another level. So my first question is actually going to be a question that isn't on our sort of notes that we prepare.
Oh, okay.
How's your Tottenham spreadsheet?
It's got some holes in it, I'd say. Oh. It's got lots of pending outgoings and a few holes of where we need to fill. So just waiting for those outgoings. It seems like Tottenham can only really manage one transfer at a time. And because you'd have thought selling your best player ever would enact a kind of really quick response.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're going to, quickly, we've got this set. And maybe we've already done that and buying players we've bought. But it's not really... Nothing's happened in the week that's gone since then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a bit of work to do for Spurs, but hopefully I'll get done in the remaining, couple of weeks now?
Yeah,
11 days of the transfer
window. Yeah, it's not long at all. So I think I wanted to sort of touch on the cost of transfers because a lot of my questions will focus on the expensivity, which is a new word that I'm adding to the dictionary.
Oh, it is,
Of transfers. So the top three transfers of all time... Neymar is obviously the top one, which I think was around 200 million. I think PSG ended up paying Barcelona. It was this release fee because they're mandatory in Spain, I think.
Well, it doubled it, didn't it? It doubled the transfer record at the time.
Wow.
It was Pogba?
I think it was Pogba, yeah. So
yeah, for like 90 million, and then they went, I'm having Neymar.
Yeah.
For 200 million. It's like, oh, wow. And Jeez. Then they went and bought...
Mbappe.
PSG then went and bought Mbappe.
Yeah, which was a loan to buy, which sounds really odd when you think of Mbappe. But...
Yeah, you normally think of loan to buy as being, well, previously, before maybe probably pre-COVID, they were much more loans and maybe we'll buy them because, is it an incidental player rather than the elite?
Yeah.
Now it's very much kind of financial management ploy, isn't it, to make sure the cash flow or the... part of the cash flow and also just the recognition of the outgoings is a different point in time.
It's interesting you say that because thinking since COVID, it was a lot... I think any player was always like a loan with an option to buy, whereas a lot more are loan with a mandatory buy clause. Like there's no option on it. So interesting. And then the third... can you remember the third transfer? The third largest transfer ever? I mean, unmitigated failure is how I'd sum it up. So...
Oh, Coutinho,
Liverpool to Barca, who then went on loan to Bayern and scored against Barca in the Champions League. I'm pretty sure that happened.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
And was that also a loan? Let me just quickly his Wikipedia page. Was that also a loan to Villa as well from there? And then they bought him.
I think it was a loan to Villa under Gerrard.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah.
And then they bought him.
Yeah,
permanently.
Yeah. They bought him. Yeah, and Coutinho at Villa has been kind of. Secretly been labelled as a bit of a reason that they can push on. Like, they've been able to get some players because Coutinho's there.
Okay.
And maybe get Unai Emery because those players are there. And it seems a bit of a trigger. But Liverpool to Barcelona, horrendous. Been awful. But it did actually mean the other way. But Liverpool have made two very big money signings because Virgil van Dijk is going to be one of the most expensive defenders. Probably third most expensive defender of all time now with Maguire and Guardiol.
Yeah.
So that was been a success. So it's short-lived, but for a period of... Because he's waned a little bit post-injury. And obviously, Alisson would have been one of the most expensive... I think he was the most expensive goalkeeper, then got usurped by...
Everyone Chelsea
Kepa.
Bought.
Kepa that summer. But then paid a release clause because they would have lost Courtois, I think it would have been.
Yeah, I think it was, So, of those three transfers... Neymar to Barca to PSG, Mbappe Monaco to PSG, Coutinho Liverpool to Barca. Which one's been the biggest success? Which one's been the biggest flop? Have any of them been a success, basically?
I think Mbappe is a success, but not because of... He's scored lots of goals, he's played consistently, and he's a true kind of world superstar they have because it really helps commercially with the club. Next in line, I'd say Neymar. Neymar... He's been a success when he's played, but he's played like half the games, 50% of the games, and missed a lot of Champions League. Like, how many times do you see he's going to miss for Champions League knockout matches with an ankle injury or something? And yeah, also the well-timed injuries around family birthdays and his birthdays.
Sister, yeah.
And then Coutinho. I genuinely cannot remember anything he did for Barcelona.
No, agreed.
And it feels like that era for Barcelona was the beginning of the end. We've got Coutinho, we've got Griezmann and Dembele. Circa 100, like probably average out at 300 million or 100 million apiece. None of them. Dembele slightly success near the end, but there's a long period again, injured, and Griezmann didn't fit, and Coutinho, yeah.
I'd honestly forgot Griezmann was at Barcelona because he's now playing at Atletico Madrid. It just erased from my memory that he had ever played at Barcelona, but yeah, crazy. I mean, the fees then, so Neymar comes in at a whopping 198 million from Barca to PSG. Mbappe, Monaco to PSG, was 163 million, not including the loan fee that they paid at the beginning of that. And Philip Coutinho, 105 million from Liverpool to Barca, which, as you said, was very well reinvested by Liverpool to get Van Dijk and Alisson. The next one on the list. So now we're going to nip into the top 10, because
okay. You
would like to think out of the top 10, there would be, you know, what's a good ratio, do you reckon, in the top 10 for successful transfers?
I mean, you'd want it over half, wouldn't you?
You would want it over 50.
It's a massive investment. You'd want it to be over 50%.
Right.
But it's not going to be anywhere near it, I don't think.
Here we go then.
For a couple of reasons.
We're going to go quick fire, Josh. I'll give you the transfer. Okay. You say success or not, or not enough time, because some of them are quite recent. Okay. Some of them recently moved. Number 4, João Félix, Benfica to Atletico Madrid, £112 million.
Not a success, wrong club, wrong manager.
Okay, Enzo Fernandez, Benfica to Chelsea, £106.8 million.
Too little time, could be a success, but Chelsea is weird.
Okay.
Are weird.
Number 6 we've covered is Griezmann, Atletico Madrid to Barcelona for £107 million. We're putting that under failure, right?
Fun fact, Griezmann's never won La Liga.
Has he not?
No.
Oh my word, that is a very interesting fact.
He's won Europa League with Atletico and he's won Copa del Rey with Barcelona.
Wow, okay. Number 7, Jack Grealish, Villa to City, 100 million on the nose. What do you think about that?
I'm saying just success, because he's a really good player, but Guardiola's thrashed out what I love about him. Like Fergie has done with Ronaldo. Grealish could have been the star boy, the club legend, scoring bangers, dribbling past players. Now he just takes the ball in really difficult places, keeps it, regurgitates it, and maybe grabs a goal or assist every now and then. It's going to be successful what Guardiola wants, which is a success, but not as successful or as joyous as it could be.
Fair enough. Number 8. Declan Rice, West Ham to Arsenal, £100 million. Too soon.
Too little time, obviously, but really good player. It's just whether the Arsenal success is maintained. It's been really quite short-lived, and it's very much Arteta-focused. Is Arteta there for the long run? Will it maintain? I don't know. I'd say that's a risky move from Declan Rice. It's not as established. Arsenal aren't as established as a force where he wants to be in his career. He wants to win trophies. They may well do. But it's just that slight risk for me. He hasn't joined Man City, which is the only real guarantee of success.
Yes, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Number 9, another recent one, Casado, Brighton to Chelsea, 100 million again. So 300 million pound players this year, this season. Declan Rice and Casado. Sorry, I've moved. So Casado, too soon to say. You're a big fan of him, right? I think we've spoken.
I am a fan of him, but I know you look at Chelsea's midfield of Casado, Fernandez, Lavia, there'll be other players who come in. But those three, if that was to be, it might not be, but that's the midfield three, it's reasonably similar.
Yeah.
Not very enigmatic. It's not no goals in that midfield at all. Good ball retention, good ball winning, and, you know, plays and nice passes. But I don't know, it doesn't feel like, if that was to be the midfield three for 10 years to come, it feels like it's asking a lot of other players to do other bits and pieces rather than being an all-action complementary midfield.
Yeah. And then number 10 is a man who has had his fair share of poor transfers. Lukaku into Milan to Chelsea.
Mainly, mainly involving transferring to Chelsea before ones. But yeah, in fact, you can. So Lukaku, I mean, he's off the back of 2 20-plus goal seasons. Joins Chelsea, scores 8 goals in the league. I think it's not a success, especially then mentally. It seems to impact. I don't think he really thought he was going to be this big star man, and gets kind of dropped, marginalised. So no, not a success.
Okay.
I mean, you know, where he finds himself, he doesn't even know where he's going to be playing now, does he?
No, exactly. So, okay. So we had Neymar not a success. I think we're saying. I just want to get the ratio
not
very
a
quickly.
Success.
Okay. So Mbappe was success. Coutinho no. Felix no. Fernandez too soon probably. Griezmann no. Jack Grealish yes. Declan Rice too soon. Caicedo too soon. Lukaku no. So. No successes. Mbappe, I think we said, was a good success. And then a lot of too soons and Grealish sitting on the fence. So yeah. 10%.
You have to go down a bit further. You go Dembele, not a success. Paul Pogba, I probably wouldn't say.
No.
Bellingham too soon. Eden Hazard to Real Madrid, no. Ronaldo and Bale to Real Madrid. Oh, no, it's Ronaldo to Juventus, probably a success. Kane to Bayern Munich too soon. Bale to Real Madrid, probably a success. Yeah, definitely a success, actually, man.
Ronaldo to Juventus is an interesting one because it was sort of successful, but everyone knew they bought him to win the Champions League, right? And it didn't. They didn't win the Champions League.
Yeah, it's where you place your expectation, isn't it?
Yeah,
determining how successful something is.
So, okay, so going through, were they successful? Weren't they successful? What actually determines for you a successful transfer? Is it around the cost that you've paid? Or is it just the player performing well? Like, if you pay 200 million for Neymar and then he scores 50 goals a season for two, three seasons in a row, is that successful? Or does it have to be like, you should have got him cheaper and then have that output?
So there is that kind of financially successful and success on the pitch. And, you know, you're paying 200 million for Neymar. It's got to be transformative for the club, really, because there's never going to be anything you can win on the pitch. Just winning on the pitch, which is going to offset that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's, you know, become the commercial success of, you know, winning Champions Leagues and becoming this big powerhouse in world football where everybody wants to go and, you know, bringing the league up to a new level, that's where that fee comes in. But you get different ones. You get low fees, years and years of service. So, like, Henri and Lampard, like, talking Premier League level. You go, aside from a fee, it's a reasonably big fee, but they turned up in big moments and won things. So you got your Drogbas, Agüeros, Cantonas.
Yep.
And you got your big fee, well, decent fee, then sold for mega money because it's actually like Ronaldo for United, Bale for Tottenham. They did well at our clubs. One of them won things because one played for Tottenham. But they generate a large transfer. Like, you look at, you know, Brighton, for example. They're successful transfers, outgoing transfers. They're not going to win things at the stage that Brighton are in their journey. They may do, but it's unlikely in that period of 2-3 seasons that they're going to win something. But generating a huge fee is transformative for the club because it may allow them to grow as a club. So there's a number of different aspects, but finance is definitely part of it. And then, you know, if a player's successful on the pitch, it normally leads to that financial success either for the club by selling them or for, you know, winning things or, you know, bringing other players, like we mentioned Coutinho. It's when the unmitigated disasters are where it's been a financial outlay and it's never getting recouped. They've been poor.
Yeah.
No one. That's why my worry for Chelsea is they bought players and the Premier League is, you know, the nicest house on the street. No one else can compare to it. So where do you sell an Enzo Fernandez for profit?
Yeah.
And not over talking, I'm not talking getting over 100 million. I'm talking about they're amortising that cost over however many years. Means his value is going to hold for longer. So they've got to sell him for, you know, 90 million next year, 80 million year after, 70 million year after. Who can afford that if you don't want to make a loss on the books for an Enzo Fernandez? It might be a success, but you really reduce down your opportunity to make financial successes when you're paying the largest fees for so many players.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what sort of transfers do you prefer? Do you like a big money signing that is successful, or do you prefer a sort of, I'd say, like a Gareth Bale, where your team picked him up slightly cheaper, he performed really well and you sold him for a big profit?
Yeah, I don't really have much appreciation for a large transfer fee.
Okay.
Maybe that's because I'm just hardened Spurs fan.
Yeah,
and it
you've had Daniel
really
Levy
happen.
For too long. Yeah.
But you see it with the fan base putting a lot of pressure on that player. You know, they were bought for X amount. I'd much rather the kind of the Gareth Bales, the Dele Alli's, where you picked him up from a lower league for, or, you know, maybe it's another league for a nominal value, and they're like, oh, this player is an absolute star. And
yeah,
it's great to see them building as a player. Don't get me wrong, I probably, if Spurs were in the market of buying, Spurs are in the market of spending bigger money on potential players still. There's okay. very rarely Spurs buy an established elite player, which may be more of a guaranteed success, but we're not, still a notch down. I think I prefer that kind of that one where you can see develop, and you've got a player who's building and you're going to get the best of them for a lower amount, or they're going to sell them on. So I quite like that kind of, that was a Spurs model, but Brighton I like.
Okay, cool. And then I guess, a sort of follow-on question, why we looked at the top 10 and most of them were unsuccessful. Why are large transfer fees generally seemingly not worth it? And should clubs learn from it, I guess, is another sort of follow-on question as well.
I think partly is, once you get to be that player and you know you're dealing with a rich club, the transfer fee does get bent out of shape regardless.
Right.
It's kind of, you know, oh, we've got a great player. We're going to really, they really want him. We're just going to, so the fee becomes even larger than it probably once was. Like Neymar fee, for example, just got bent out, all out of shape, didn't it?
Yeah.
And so it immediately becomes big. And then you've got all the pressure that goes with it. I think like players don't often talk about that, but there's definitely is that pressure attached to being that big name. Then there's also expectation from the fans that goes with it. So it's odd, but these are considered some of the best players in the world at the time.
That's what confuses me about it, yeah, is that they're the best players in the world, and it never seems like Antoine Griezmann should have worked at Barcelona, no matter how much they paid. They could have paid £1 or they could have paid 200 million. It should have worked, but it didn't.
Yeah, I think, does it maybe become a point where, you know, your kind of analytics go out the window and your scout recommendations go out the window, and it becomes a rich man's, you know, big purchase going, yeah, I bought us Griezmann. It's like, he doesn't fit the system now. I just couldn't resist.
Yeah.
Big money signing. And it becomes, does the player fit at that point in time? And I think I think you're probably not listening. You're not having to scout Neymar at that point, are you?
No, okay, so yeah.
You're getting him because he's one of the biggest names in world football, part of that great trio. He's got an injury record. You know, are they really vetting his personal life and going, or they're making allowances for it because, hey, he's so good, it's Neymar. And I think, you know, Eden Hazard, for example, was transferred to Real Madrid. Like, he's probably 29, 30 when he makes that move, I think,
yeah,
it is. It's like, come on. The man's been taking 10 kicks on the ankle every single day for, you know, 10 years. He's going to break at some point. It's not a good time to buy him. So I think there's a bit where it goes out the window in terms of actually doing your due diligence in a transfer, and it just becomes a big toy for rich people.
I was going to say, is it more of like you can imagine that the scouts and the analysts sit down and chat to the manager and the board around who they think should be on a list, and then potentially like the accountants and the commercial side sit down, and then the board sort of go, well, we're going to weigh 60-40 in favour of the accountants because we want to get a big marketing player. So, you know, the analysis doesn't really matter so much. And because I feel like that, like Pogba was an unbelievable player at Juventus, and when Man United signed him, I was very excited. But when he played, you were sort of like, it doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit what we want that midfield to do. He clearly needed a Pirlo or a more experienced head next to him to allow him to go and be more adventurous.
Yeah.
But the commercial side of it was massive, like humongous for Man United. So I do think there must be that sort of fighting in the board to understand what's going on. So yeah,
definitely.
Interesting.
For a player at your club, how many seasons does a player have to be at your club for you to be deemed a success? Has there been a player at United where you go, you've had, you know, one season there and done great? Or, you know, does it have to be three seasons to really establish themselves?
So personally, I give players that I'm very similar to you, I think, on this, is that players from outside of the Premier League, generally I'll give them a season to settle in and then judge them from their second season in. So, for example, Antony, I'll be looking at this season much more vigorously to see how he's playing. Is it going to improve from last year? But Mason Mount, I'd be like a couple of months, know the system, know how the manager wants you to play, and you should be playing well because you know the Premier League. But I'm trying to think of a signing. I mean, Vidic and Evra are the big ones where it was like they came, they looked awful. 3 or 4 months later, they had settled in and it was like great. You know, we never looked back. Evra was a great left back and Vidic was a superb centre back. But I don't know. I don't really have a time. It's much easier to write players off wrongly as a fan, isn't it? It's much easier just to go, nah, bin them off. So, because Maguire's the same. Maguire has such a bad rap, but actually under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he was a very, very good centre-back and played really well. It's just that his mistakes were so glaring for the price tag he made that that's what everyone remembers of recency bias. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I was looking at the list of transfer records again, and just one that jumps out at me is Kevin De Bruyne. 2015, Wolfsburg to Man City, $55 million. Like, that's an unmitigated success, isn't it? That's absolutely ridiculous, that price tag. Yeah, $55 million in 2015 is a lot of money, but the longevity, the play, the player he's become since that move, it's just ridiculous.
Who's surprisingly old now.
How old is he?
Well, he just obviously just got injured now, just done his hamstring. He's 32.
Wow.
Now. So we are seeing the beginning of the end, I'd say, with Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
And a few injuries, obviously. Injured in the Champions League final, covered over summer, injured in first game of this season, will be out for kind of 3 months. So, yeah, it feels like he just came on late, didn't he? So,
yeah.
When he joined, he was 24, 25 when he joined Man City.
Yeah. So, my final question to you before, obviously, you get to ask me a question that I have no idea about. Your final question, what is Spurs's... Two questions. There's only one written down in our notes, but I'll make it two questions. What is Spurs' biggest waste of money, in your opinion? And also, what's the best investment in terms of a player that they've done? I assume it would be Bale, but I thought I'd ask you. So
biggest waste of money. So our top five record signings, it's going to get pretty evident pretty quickly who the worst one is.
Okay.
Tanguy and Ndombele is our record signing.
Right.
And it's Richarlison, Romero, Maddison, Sanchez. So, as we did earlier, Ndombele, he's obviously the worst signing we've ever made. He's such a waste of talent, such a poor application of his talent. We are making a huge loss on him financially. And it's just so frustrating because it's one of those players you really want to succeed.
Yeah.
Richarlison, I mean, I doubt he's going to be classified as a success. It frustrates me watching him play. It seems like he always complains that his poor passes because he's been sived down. But, yeah, he's a frustrating watch. You never know. He seems like he's quite a good fit for the system currently in. But, yeah. Romero, I think, hopefully will be a success.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got clubs that will be sniffing around for him as a transfer as well. So he will be able to turn a profit or he'll stay here because he's a very good player. Maddison, I couldn't see that being a great success. That'd be good. and Davinson Sanchez started off really well, but it's Tanguy and Ndombele is our biggest waste of money.
Interesting. Because I was thinking when I had that question lined up, I was thinking about, there could be like a rogue Helder Postiga, Vincent Janssen, like these sort of players that you didn't sign for a lot, but at the time you didn't have loads of money. So,
yeah, but I mean, Ndombele is just such a big, and that's, and it's not directly related. So the summer before Pochettino left, we signed Giovanni Lo Celso and Tanguy Ndombele because our midfield was screaming out for reinforcements because we started the Champions League final with Sissoko and Winks in midfield.
Yeah.
And obviously, Pochettino then gets sacked. It's not so that there's correlation there between those players and not their performances and Pochettino going, but it's bigger than that. But you think if they could have done better, could it have been so different? But yeah, but it's just so much money, so much wasted money,
yeah.
But so much hope as well. Because even this summer, he was looking good in training, and fans were like, oh yeah, this is going to be it. And now it's like talk of Fenerbahce coming with an £8 million bid, and we're like, should we accept it? It's like, probably.
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. And bigger success in terms of little outlay?
There's a fair few, because we've done, so first one actually sprung to mind was Rafael van der Vaart.
Okay.
Because that was one of the last times I can really remember us signing an elite player and it just working, and it fit like a glove. It was so, so nice. There is obviously Gareth Bale, financial success and one of the greatest players I've ever seen in a Spurs shirt. There's a few like Luka Modric for 16 million, great player.
Yeah.
Dele Alli for 5 million. And, you know, you look back and, you know, could have sold him at his pomp, or, you know, managed it better and you made a big profit, or he'd still be a player that could perform at the level we want to now. But yeah, there's been lots of successes, and, you know, for, you know, little money. But yeah, probably Rafael van der Vaart is one that springs to mind.
Nice. Okay. Because I was thinking again, like when I was thinking of the question, Berbatov potentially. I mean, you doubled your money for him when you sold him to United.
Yeah. And that was a kind of, that's where it comes down to. He was there for two and a bit seasons. So you signed him. So he started his third season with us and then went to United. So I absolutely loved him and great player. I just wanted him to stay. I felt like he could have stayed for longer. It felt like he just fit so nicely. It's really sad to see him go.
Yeah. Okay.
At his peak.
Because that's interesting with United, right? Is that's where they've moved away from doing that sort of transfer this year, it seems, because they've gone for Højlund for big money. But it's a younger player, whereas Berbatov, we got 4 years out of him and then sold him for €5 million, I think it was, to Fulham. I think that's what I found it on Transfer Market earlier. But yeah, and we paid like €38 million for him off you or something. And it was like, we just got those prime years out of him and then shipped him off for a minimal fee. So it's interesting to see how it's going. But yeah, to be honest, that was the questions I had for you, Josh, for today's episode. So have you got a secret question for me?
No, just need to think of one.
Okay.
In your view, does every player have his price?
Oh. So. Okay.
So you can focus on Man United. Say, focus on Manchester United's current squad. Does every player in that squad have his price?
Yeah, I think they do. I think every player has a price. Because the only one I could think of maybe like our current squad would be Rashford, because it's that homegrown through the academy thing, right? But I think if someone came in with 200 million, like, you'd be stupid to turn it down, I think.
And like, at that point, when the secondary bit hot is club dependent, I suppose, on that value. Man City come in with 200 million.
Yeah, you say no. Yeah, you said that's very true.
So Rashford's probably your most valuable asset, we're thinking.
I don't necessarily think he's the most valuable asset. I think when you consider everything around Rashford in terms of through the academy, still relatively young, English, that adds up to everything making him one of the least sellable assets. But I don't think he's the most valuable asset in the squad, if you get what I mean. It's like...
I don't fully get that, yeah.
If the next question is who is the most valuable asset, then I'll be like, I don't know. Because I can't...
I think it probably is Rashford. Can't think of who...
Probably,
I think... Unless you're buying potential.
Yeah, I think Luke Shaw is... actually integral to how we've played last season. He started the season pretty poorly, but last season I think Luke Shaw was our best player, and I think the drop from Luke Shaw to Malacia was quite obvious. It wasn't as bad as when it was Luke Shaw to Brandon Williams, but I think that's the thing, because I come from it as a sense like that sort of value asset to the team, how the manager wants to play. But I think Rashford is eclipses that in terms of an asset because of everything he has.
Just being the position and the position he is as position, well. Yeah.
And the position. So
yeah, I'll probably put Bruno's probably up there as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I think if Man City came
Man City came in for Rashford.
Yeah. It's a no.
Do you think United would consider it a no? United seem to don't know how to. They'd probably consider it a yes until fans spoke on social media spoke about it and go, oh, we have to U-turn this. And
yeah, I mean, that's probably what would happen. It. Yeah, that's probably what would happen. But I think if City came in for Bruno with a world record fee, I think they'd sell. I think they'd sell. And I don't think I would be upset. I mean, I'd be upset that he's moved to Man City, but I don't think I'd be upset with that sort of fee selling to a rival. But it's a very interesting question. I think every player has their fee. I don't think any club in the world would reject $1 billion for someone or £1 billion.
I mean, I'm a supporter of a club who's just sold their homegrown greatest ever player. So, yeah, every player has his fee.
Yeah, exactly. But I think Tottenham have done well for a 30-year-old goal scorer Harry Kane, 100 million.
I think what the fans who don't think it's done well are just clinging on to the hope he's going to sign a new contract, and he just wasn't.
Yeah,
exactly. He wasn't going to sign a new contract unless we somehow managed to be winning the title. Yeah. I think we genuinely have to be winning the title for him to sign a new contract. That's
okay.
Just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think. And the more I look back, I don't think he loved us anywhere near as much as we loved him. He's a professional, absolute consummate professional. He didn't speak ill of the club. He just moved on with it, and he's enjoying his time at Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and he'll be drinking pints at the end of the season when he's lifting that trophy. Is it a big shield, isn't it? It's a big shield they have for the Bundesliga, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Right, well, we'll end that one there, Josh. Thank you for the chat and the answering the questions around the transfer window. You've got to pick a topic for next week, so have a think and see what you want to do, and I'll remember to have my secret question ready. So, but thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one. Cheers.